Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
You are listening to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. Greetings to you wherever you may be. I am your host, Chad Smith, coming to you from the Mile High Two Daft Yanks Studios. And joining me in a separate Mile High 2 Daft Yanks Studios, filling in for Mr. Corey Chatelain, is Jim Hart of Year Zero Soccer.
Hola.
Welcome, Jim. And joining us for this first segment to talk about some Manchester United schadenfreude is Jacob from across the pond. Welcome to the show, Jacob.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so let's give a round of applause for you, to be fair.
Here.
All right, and then I said the reason Jacob is on because he sent us this sob story. He missed his own podcast this week because he was playing in a league final of his own, playing some actual soccer.
That is correct. We did win, and I did score the winning goal. It was a 3-2 thriller. Went down a goal, they went up a goal, back and forth, finally nicked the winner a couple minutes left. So not a pretty goal. In fact, it salvaged a pretty poor afternoon. Otherwise, I would have looked a lot like Wayne Rooney. No shots on target and a lot of offsides.
Okay, well, let's get a fanfare for that. So that was my main question. If you lost a game, we were going to boo you. So thankfully, for your sake, you won and scored the game-winning goal. So I'm surprised that you should have sent the video to Manchester United. Maybe they might have picked you up.
Well, that would have been a cheaper option than spending $36 million, a cool $36 million.
That's right. All right, so let's get into that. The Manchester schadenfreude is being served fast and warm this day, Jim and Jacob. So let's talk with this whole De Gea situation. I don't really want to get into what happened. Who knows what happened? It's a he said, she said thing. With them and Real Madrid.
No, you got it right. You got it right the first time.
Yeah, what did I say? Oh, did I? Is that what that sounded like? Okay. Well, anyway. So who knows what happened there? Something with files, computers, fax machines. This is what happens when you procrastinate and don't do things until the last minute. Reports are that the two sides didn't really actually open up negotiations until yesterday, which was this transfer deadline in Spain. So, with my question for both of you, and we'll start with Jacob since he's the new guy to the show, since Jim, you've been on before. What do you think will be the fallout from this De Gea situation? Can he go back to Manchester United and do a job until maybe the January window to where he might be able to move again?
No, I really think there are serious second and third level implications. But to answer the first question, no, I think the relationship with Van Gaal is irreparable. I don't think it can be repaired. I think we know the type of manager he is. And if we listen to Hristo Stoichkov's recent statements, obviously played with him at Barcelona, that he goes and he destroys clubs, I think that may foreshadow how this could play out. I think, obviously, Real Madrid has the better of this deal no matter which way you parse it. They get to keep one keeper in Navas and have another in Casillas at their club who both want to fight for a place in the team, push each other. Meanwhile, they send an unhappy De Gea to Rue and I think kind of torment a potential Champions League rival. Other implications, I think, are looking at the Spain squad and how that's going to play out for Casillas and, whether or not he loses his starting spot. So I'm not too hopeful, and I really think Manchester United and Louis van Gaal in particular really made a hash of this whole situation.
Okay. Some good points there. Jim, do you have anything to add?
I think Louis van Gaal is completely insane. I'll just work from that premise. I think that from the moment he came to Man U, he's been off the rails. I mean, just completely off the rails. And this is just, another situation where, Van Gaal just, whether it was Woodward or Van Hall, I placed the blame at Van Hall, and now he's stuck with a goalie who, there's no indication that David De Gea is going to be unprofessional, but he's got to be holding some resentment here, and I don't know if you can put him back on the team at this point. And then, Keylor Navas is sitting there going, hey, I'm supposed to be in England, and now what do I do? And so, for me, it's just another indication that Man United is a clown car, and its driver is either drunk or insane or both.
But I'm wondering, Jim and Chad, how do you rate Manchester United's transfer window, putting into context, of course, Dom De Gea, and the Marshall signing? Does this ruin their transfer window? I mean, do you think this casts a negative shadow?
Oh, I would say it definitely is negative, because they've upset the balance of their squad, and they only brought in a striker who's unproven, a teenager, to kind of split time there with Rooney. And so if Rooney's not scoring goals, who's going to score goals for them?
Yeah, I think you have to, you take the whole thing into consideration. You look at the lie when, Pedro went to Chelsea instead of Man U, and they're saying, oh, we didn't really want him. That's a lie. And then they go out and spend, £36 million on an unproven 19-year-old. So, that's insanity. they don't do anything to a defense that is in tatters, and they're going to expect Daley Blind to hold the line back there, and he's not a center back. So they didn't do anything to address what I think is their biggest weakness, which is their back four. And they have no striker. I mean, say what you will about Van Persie, but, they sold him on the cheap to Fenerbahce, and they got nobody who can score goals. Memphis Depay is, an unproven quantity. He hasn't done jack in the league games. He did play well against Bruges, but, I don't know. Bruges is not really the same.
No, Bruges are not world beaters. But I was just, thinking, I've said this since last year, I completely agree with your assessments on Van Gaal. But I think, what is his strategy, right? Moyes got a lot of criticism for the way he's played. But to be honest, I haven't seen a dramatic shift since Van Gaal's taken over the team. I think last year he was figuring it out. This year it seems to be no clearer. I mean, I don't know the total number of players that he started, but it seems like everybody in the squad's gotten some play all over the field in multiple positions. I'm not so sure that he has a strategy that goes on the field and off the field for transfer policies. And some part of me just thinks that the whole De Gea situation and transfers and getting a striker in writ large never would have been an issue under Ferguson. I think Ferguson would have had the managerial know-how, the tact, to convince De Gea, that it was in his best interest and both parties' interest if he just signed a one-year extension. He could play well, help win the Champions League, you raise your profile, get in the Spain squad, get in the Euros, and you have to promise at the end of next year, we'll set a very low release clause, or a very medium-sized release clause, and you can go to Real Madrid, and the swoop will be on. But to have this whole public row, you're right. As I said, cast a huge shadow, and I just wonder where Manchester United go from here. They're on the international break, and then they come back and have a huge match against Liverpool. So how do you kind of bounce back from that?
Yeah, no, you both make some great points, and Jim talking about the defense, and that's what people never talk about with any club. It needs more focus. Manchester United actually, you could say they weakened their squad in terms of defense. Not really selling who I like to call Johnny Red Card Evans to West Brom. So maybe that's addition by subtraction, getting rid of Evans. But yeah, let's focus on this French kid, Anthony Martial, who comes in for £36 million guaranteed, with up to £58 million total in add-ons, and those are league appearances, if they win the league title, international experience, international caps. So who knows what all that entails. But there's a good chance they won't pay that full number unless he does become, you know, truly world class. And at 19 years old, who's to say what will happen with him? But it's a it deems to me as a panic buy, because he could have been had for about $20 million in total earlier in the summer. I know Spurs were after him. I think they bid $15 to $18 million. Monaco said $20. Spurs said that's too much for us. They walked away, and then guess what happened?
Yeah, I mean, they did the same thing.
No, answer the question. Guess what happened after that?
I thought it was rhetorical. I don't know.
No, he signed a contract extension.
Yeah.
He signed a brand new contract just last month with Monaco. So then that automatically jacks up the price, because he added 5 years to his contract. And then so Man U is going to pay potentially up to $58 million or pounds for a player that they could have had for 20 a month ago. So that's just some food for thought.
That seems like a real hash.
Yeah, so if he was their target all along, why not just get him a month ago? So something bad happened in the back room at Old Trafford.
Well, I think they thought they were going to have Pedro.
And that's very well maybe the case, Jim. Yeah, well, and another thing, then how do you, with them bringing in Martial, then what's the whole deal with Chicharito, you think? He makes the $7.3 million move to Leverkusen. I guess he just never was in Van Gaal's plans. He was on loan last year at the Real Madrid. He gets sold this year. Do you think he's someone that maybe they should have kept? What made this move happen?
I don't know what made the move happen, but I think you hit it on the head. He was never in favor for whatever reason. I don't know that he necessarily fit the mold of the type of striker that Van Gaal liked. I mean, I rate him very highly. I think his movement is great off the ball. He's great coming off the bench. He adds a spark. I mean, there's some players that you don't like bringing off the bench because they need a lot of game time, you know, to get up to speed. I kind of think Walcott happens to be one of those players. You know, someone who's very, very great when they get extended period of time, but you bring them in for short periods and they're ineffective. I can't say why, other than the fact that I don't think he believes that he can play the lone striker up top, and he's unwilling perhaps to bring Rooney back into the central midfield, you know, to forcing out Carrick or Schneiderlin or Herrera or Mata. So that's the only thing I can think of. And maybe he thinks he can't operate, you know, either wide left or right on a three. So that's what I would go for. But I'm really baffled by letting go of Van Persie. I think he's got a lot of juice left in the tank. And if the other option is now bringing in Fellaini to kind of give you a long ball hold up presence, well, I think Van Persie's a lot better and can do that for, you know, much more effectively.
Yeah, that is it's an odd situation, because Van Persie played obviously for Van Gaal on the Dutch side. So everybody thought when this happened that it was a match made in heaven, and then just 1 year later, he's shown the door as well.
Yeah, I mean, Van Persie has, you know, a terrific World Cup. He has, like, the goal of the World Cup almost, if it wasn't for James' goal. And all of a sudden he's out the door, you know. But, you know, and I'll bring this up because I've read it, and it's in his past. And, you know, Van Gaal has never been real big on Spanish-speaking players. You know, he's got a history of that, and I think that's why, you know, players in the past have been advised not to play for him.
Do we need to preface that statement for legal reasons with allegedly, in quotation marks?
Yeah, I think allegedly, yeah. But
well,
I mean,
maybe. I don't know. This is America, so I don't think
you have to. It's a theory. It's out there, though.
Yeah. Like, theoretically might be better. Yeah, theoretically.
Theoretically.
He doesn't players.
Those rumors are out there. And I think it may play into part of, you know, why Mata, it took him, you know, 8 months or 6 months or whatever to break the starting lineup. I don't know.
That's a good point.
Like I said, Louis Van Gaal is insane. So I don't know where, what's in his head.
So where would you play Martial, however you pronounce it, in the team? I mean, where do you think he fits in? That's open-ended for either one of you.
Well, I think you probably, if you're Man United, you know, the crowd wants you to play a 4-4-2, and so hopefully he can play off Rooney in a 4-4-2. But the problem is you've got Mata and Depay, who are guys who like to take the ball and dribble in. That's part of the reason why Rooney isn't scoring, right? Is because you've got Mata and Depay next to him, who they're not looking to pass to Rooney. You know, they're looking to either score their own goals or you know, make something happen, you know, in the box, but not necessarily Rooney, you know.
So who would you displace in the center midfield or wide in order to make room for him? That's why I get hung up.
Yeah, I don't know.
Herrera? You take out Herrera or Shidlin?
Herrera's been playing good football. He's one of the bright spots on their team. I don't see a place for him unless you go to a 4-4-2 and you put, you know, Depay, Herrera, and Mata, and somebody else in the four midfield behind him.
Yeah, no, he's
probably
definitely
Schneiderland.
He's definitely been brought in to be the backup striker. That's his best role. He can play left and right. He's right-footed. I know when Spurs were after him, they were looking for him to kind of maybe come in and play that wide forward on the left and cut in on his right foot. So they could use him there, but that's where Depay plays.
Yeah.
So maybe he plays out wide right, but I think you're right, Jim. I think you'll see him when they go 4-4-2 and he'll back up Rooney. That's really all where he can play. And so I don't know if he's going to displace any of the three current players in the system right now and that attacking part.
I wonder maybe if you could, you know, if Rooney's not playing well and he's not scoring goals, to get him more time on the ball, because he does look a bit frustrated, I wonder if you can reverse it and play him as the lone striker and have Rooney play off of him, playing Depay and Mata on either side.
And
Can't we make fun of Man U instead of trying to fix them?
I like that idea.
Oh, I mean, where do you want to start? I mean, gosh, you could start with Romero. You could start with Blind and his haircut. Shaw, too. I mean, there's any
infinite
number of... he does look... he's a meaty fellow. That's for sure.
That's right. And then I guess the last piece of thing, and we'll get into the bashing here some more, Jim, but just the last piece of news is the young prodigy, who's not such a prodigy anymore, apparently. Well, maybe he is. I don't know. Yanezai... to Dortmund on loan, which I find kind of odd because you would think that he would be able to get into there, at least in the rotation. But I guess with the arrival of Depay, I guess the LVG figures that there's just not enough playing time for him. I don't know what made that decision happen as well.
You know, that one puzzles me because Yanezai scored a goal. He's been looking lively. He's been on the ball. He's going to make BVB a much better team.
Yeah. I guess the only logical explanation is, you know, he's just very intense that the LVG, that he's not going to play whatsoever. So, you know, might as well get him some experience. Although I think he's plenty good to get in the team. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that team lacks width. You know, Louis van Gaal's belt size and circumference is wider than the width on the Manchester United field. You like that one? It's a little bash there. Thank you. Yes. So yeah, but they lack a lot of width, and I think he'd give that to them. Which raises other questions, like why is Valencia? You know, we're not seeing any Valencia. I think they would help this team out a lot.
Yeah, but I think that's a problem that a lot of teams have these days, because that 4-2-3-1 where those wide players are always cutting inside is the in-style tactic for
Absolutely.
Whatever reason. Yeah, and I don't understand it either.
You're right. There's no a lot of sides aren't playing with natural width. I think that's one thing that makes Palace so attractive, is they have genuine speed down the flanks. I mean, look at all the top contenders. City is the only one that's really playing with out wingers that are stretching the field. And yeah, you're right. I just cannot stand this obsession of cutting inside. You know, where are the days of great crosses into the box, getting around the fullbacks, getting to the touchline and whipping them in? Yeah, it's 4-2-3-1 is hip now, but who knows how long it'll stay.
Oh, that is right. All right, any more thoughts, Jim?
Well, you know, I think that that as long as LVG has his hands on the wheels, that it's just going to be a roller coaster, and you know, I don't think they're going to finish top four this year. I think the EPL has raised the bar this year. I think Man City especially has raised the bar. Chelsea is playing horrid, but I think they'll get their shit together. But I think other teams have raised the bar this year, and especially in the mid-table. You know, the mid-table teams have money now. You know, this new TV deal has kind of changed the landscape, and you can't walk into Newcastle and expect to walk over them anymore. And I think that's going to cause teams like Man United a lot of trouble.
But you can walk into Newcastle and have Mitrovic walk all over you.
Yeah, when he's not suspended.
Yeah. Yeah,
the guy seems to be a little bit of a nutter if you've done any research on him. But, yeah, that red card was one of those softest red cards you'll ever see.
That was a reputation red card.
Yes.
Yeah. I think they got it right. But
That's true.
Yeah. One last thought on Giannis. I just had just been reading this on the internet. I've been at work all day looking at some of the transfer rumors. And I guess in that transfer, it was discussed that they could have paid, you know, $60 million for the release clause on what's his name? Dortmund forward. I'm blanking now.
Royce?
Yes, they could have gotten Royce on the release clause by paying 60. And so they decided that was too high and as part of the Giannis deal. And instead, they then went with, you know, $36 million for a player, I think, of inferior quality. So you just wonder, you know, Man United's got a lot of money. Louis van Gaal spent, what is it, $500 million? He has spent a considerable amount of money. You know, what would an extra, or whoever you want to blame it on, the chairman, what's an extra, you know, $24 million to get a player of superior quality?
Yeah, and with the, mind you, that the financial fair play rules have been rolled back as well. So that kind of takes that out of the equation.
Those really don't exist anymore, do they? I mean,
basically,
look at Manchester City. I mean, Manchester City spent, you know, the GDP of a medium-sized country.
Yes. So.
Wow. How much have they spent?
I believe they spent around 200 billion, a million, I'm sorry, million pounds, 200 million pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, you're probably right, because it was 60 for Sterling, another 60 for De Bruyne.
It was 50 for Sterling, it was 56 for De Bruyne.
Yeah, so that's almost 120 right there. So, and then they added a couple more players. I'm forgetting already. They got a midfielder, and I forgot to mention him when we did the transfer show. We were like, oh, they didn't get a young midfielder. But they did. They got a young central midfielder. I already forget who it is.
And then, you know, I think that's one of the biggest themes of this transfer window is the two Manchesters. You know, as you've got Man City out there who's just buying young, experienced, good players, and Man United, which used to do that, is now buying, you know, from the crazy aisle.
What aisle number is that? The crazy That's, aisle.
It's like aisle 51. Behind the bathroom at Kmart.
I don't know about your Colorado. Yeah, wow. I don't know about your Colorado supermarkets, but the liquor and beer aisle is like the first aisle in my local Safeway. I think they're in aisle number one.
Okay. That could be the case.
Now I'm doing a bit of research now, just a quick Wikipedia work. looking at, you know, how much Man City have have spent. But let me just throw out a couple countries whose nominal GDP they're spending is more than. Panama, Serbia, Croatia, Burma, Sri Lanka, Oman, Slovakia, real powerhouses.
Yeah, well, those are pretty big countries, so that's a lot of money.
Malta, Armenia, boy.
Ooh, Armenia, yeah, some...
Yes.
Some System of a Down territory there.
I did not know that.
Yeah, they're Armenian. That's what makes them so great.
I saw a good tweet. I saw a good tweet the other day that was Zirdan Shaqiri is the only person to have ever been born in Albania and ended up in a worse place.
Yes. Welcome to Stoke. Yes, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. I think Corey might have even mentioned that same joke. That was on Twitter quite a bit. So, yeah, that's pretty funny. So, also, it's pretty funny is Manchester United, of course. So, LVG, the expert advice of Jim and Jacob here, says that he has no clue what he's doing. And may I say, long may it continue.
Bravo.
Amen. Yeah, bravo. Cheers. Cheers to that. I'll drink to that. I will.
Awesome. Okay. All right, Jacob. Well, thank you for joining us. Please give our kind regards to the rest of the boys at ATP.
Yes, I will. Yeah, you can find us at ATP Radio on Twitter. You can find me at ATP Jacob. I'm always tweeting out what I think are witty and sardonic comments and tweets. And if you disagree, well, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would just urge you to check out, before this, you know, transfer window talk, just to check out at Footy Memes on Twitter as well. They've got some great stuff, including some good David De Gea memes of him in prison with Louis van Gaal behind him with the handcuffs, and a great one of Giroud, you know, pointing to an open space saying, this is my new strike partner. So all sorts of great stuff. Urge you to check it out.
Oh, we definitely will. So,
All right. Take it easy. Until next time.
Yes, until next time, we'll talk soon, and hopefully maybe we can do some more collaboration with us and ATP. That'd be awesome.
Anytime.
All right.
As long as it's not Scouse related.
we'll get away from that. We'll get away from it. The fans have spoken. No more Scouse talk.
Okay. All right, Jacob. You have a good night.
You too. Bye.
All right. Yep, bye. All right, there we go, folks. The Manchester United Schadenfreude has been served up, and now it's time to move on. It's time to move on, Jim, to the things that didn't happen.
Things that did happen.
Or didn't happen.
Oh, didn't happen.
Yes. We have the three big ones out of England. Three big transfers that did not happen, who I'm shocked that maybe I didn't think that all three would happen, but I was pretty sure that two of the three would happen. And so the big ones today were Berahino of West Brom did not make his move to Tottenham Hotspur. You have Charlie Austin of QPR did not make a move anywhere, and he was linked to a number of clubs. And then John Stones, he who was tapped up by Chelsea for the longest time, Everton refused to sell. So Berahino, Austin, and Stones all stay at their clubs. Guess what is your analysis on what happened in this situation and why are they still at their clubs?
Well, let me start with Stones because that one's nearest and dearest to my heart.
Yes.
Being a Chelsea man. You know, and I've got to call some hypocrisy on Roberto Martinez here. You know, this is a guy who, you know, was a Swansea player, was then a Swansea manager, and, you know, his first opportunity to jump to the EPL, he took it, leaving Swansea behind, knowing that, you know, they were on a direct path to the EPL. And for him to take the stance that he took on the John Stones deal, I think was pretty hypocritical. But that said, also, you know, the other side of it is, you know, a big club is not entitled to any player they want. But I still think at £40 million they would be over, you know, Chelsea would be overpaying for Stones. I think his true value you know, being a decent defender, English, which makes him more valuable in the EPL, it's probably somewhere in the 25 to 30 million pound range in this market. And I think they should have taken the 40 million. I think Everton was kind of dumb not to do that.
No, I agree. They probably should have. But I'm interested in your Martinez thoughts on why he's a hypocrite. I'm not following there. What makes him a hypocrite exactly?
Well, because some of the statements he made, you know, were that, you know, him saying that, you know, after Stones put in his transfer request, the club denied his transfer request. You know, I think once a player has put in a transfer request, then I think it comes time, you know, to negotiate a price. And I don't think that Everton ever negotiated in fairly on a price is the way it appears. Now, I don't know what, you know, none of us knows what really goes on there, but from all appearances, it looks like they just simply didn't want to sell it. And they just put their feet down and said no. Which is pretty unusual.
It is unusual. That's why I wanted to highlight this today. It's because usually when the money's there, the clubs eventually will cave, especially near the deadline, and they didn't today. So it is quite fascinating. So maybe are we seeing a change in how things are going to operate in the future?
No, I don't think so.
No?
You know, I think the player put in a transfer request. So obviously he wanted to play for Chelsea at some point. There was, hopefully he's professional enough now to move past that and not let, you know, whatever emotional, you know, churn he went through, because obviously it was affecting him. I mean, he had a bad game. He was pulled out of a game. He wasn't doing well during the negotiation. So, but unless Roberto Martinez pulls Everton out of the fire that they put themselves into last year, I mean, Martinez is going to be out of a job this year. So now what are you stuck with? Stones could be stuck with a new manager who doesn't favor him.
That's true, and he could be sold next summer.
And he could be sold next summer for a less amount of money. So he could be making less money next summer. I think
maybe. Yeah, but I know the Everton chairman is one of the longest-serving chairmen in the EPL, and I know that he is pretty strong in his ways and his will as well. So I think he has a lot to do with this situation as well.
But Chelsea treated Everton very fairly in the Lukaku situation. You know, Lukaku wanted to be a starting striker, and Jose was not going to say, "Romelu, you're our starting striker." You know, Jose doesn't do that. And so that wasn't enough of a comfortable situation for Lukaku. And so he said, "I'd like to transfer,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like to play for Everton." And the club said, "Go."
Yeah.
Just very similar to the Peter Cech situation. You know, Peter mm-hmm. Cech said, "I want to start, and I want to stay in London." So the club says, "Fine. Well, you know, you can go to Arsenal." I think these clubs need to look out for the player more. I think that's how you build a good reputation as a club that players want to play for, is by treating, you know, your players fairly. You know, if they really do want out of the situation, if the situation isn't right for them, then you allow them to move on to a situation that's right for them.
No, and I agree. I would say in general terms, if a player doesn't want to, if he puts in a transfer request, there's no reason to keep that player. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. Is he going to play hard? I know maybe you saw this. I think it was in the League Cup last week, to where this was a big thing on Twitter, to where John Stones was playing. That was the very day that he put in his transfer request. You see the vine or the highlight where there's a ball shot right at him. He's standing in the six-yard box, and he jumps over the ball, and the ball goes in for a goal.
Yeah, the Barnsley game.
Yeah, who what's stopping him from doing that further down the line?
Yeah.
Just as a big F you if he's really that upset. I mean, I don't know if he did that on purpose, but yeah. It didn't look good.
Right.
That's for sure. Right.
Yeah, that's the risk that Everton takes in forcing a player's hand, because it's not just the club that's involved when the money happens like this, right? Because the player gets a personal transfer fee.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, whether it's 5 or 10%, I mean, you know, that's a, you know, maybe a few million pounds that would have been in John Stone's pocket, like, you know, just like that. And, you know, that's a big incentive.
Oh, it is.
So, I think Everton made a mistake.
Okay, and so let's just – the most similar to the situation would be the Berahino situation with West Brom. He put in an official transfer request. He wanted to go to Spurs. It did not go through. Who knows what happened there? There's a lot of stuff that Berahino was told that he can go, and then at the last minute, West Brom changed their minds. And then he came out publicly, and I was going to ask you, since you were paying more attention to the Stones situation, did Stones ever come out with any type of statement? I don't think so.
No.
I didn't hear anything.
No.
Yeah.
Stones didn't, but Berahino did.
Yeah, Berahino came out on Twitter and claims that he will never play for West Brom again. Now, will he do that? I seriously doubt it, but, I mean, West Brom passed up a reported, I don't know, £25 million for a player. I mean, if you're going to get £25 million for a player that doesn't want to play for you, I'd say take the money and run. That's a lot of money. Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what they valued him at, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was 30 million is what I heard. 30 million pounds is what they wanted. But I think they would have accepted 25, but the problem is a lot of the reports say that they basically wanted the money in one lump sum, which to anybody who follows this stuff seriously knows that no transfers paid 100% up front.
Right.
It doesn't happen. We're working with monopoly money these days. Everything is done on – you might pay, 30 to 40% up front, and the rest will be over time with add-ons, monthly payments. So I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't really trust the media. But he did come out and say that he would not play for them. So now you're stuck with an asset. That's not much of an asset if he refuses to play. I don't know what's going to happen here. That's going to be interesting to see.
But you're also dealing with a director in Daniel Levy that is known for setting a price and not moving on a price.
And that's true. That's true too. And I don't know, as we said, that could be a narrative as well. Levy has got that reputation though.
Yeah. I mean, if he values a player at 25 million and the club wants 30, Levy might just have been stubborn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll get on to more on that later when we have time here. So, yeah, so Stones, Berahino, I think Everton handled things better. And plus, you got the fact that West Brom was releasing official statements on Twitter and their club website every time a bid came in. And then they were complaining, oh, the player's head's been turned. Well, yeah, maybe if you didn't announce every time a bid was put in.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, you're partially to blame in that situation, I would say. It's craziness.
Yeah, that's one thing. You know, a lot of the clubs try to keep things out of the press or strategically leak things.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
West Brom just seems to be insane at times.
Yeah, they took the nuclear option.
Yeah.
Claim that the player's head's been turned, but then every time a bid came in, you come out with an official club statement. Well, yeah, that's not going to help things. That's going to make things worse. And then I think that led to the blow up today. So, as I said, this is going to be a fascinating situation to see in that next game. Now, mind you, he hasn't he hasn't played for him the past couple games because they said, oh, we're protecting him and his head wasn't right. Well, now you may have ruined that relationship permanently.
Yeah, but Berahino's got to walk kind of a tightrope as well because he needs to keep his value up.
Yeah, and he's under contract too. So,
yeah,
it is a fine line. Both sides made mistakes, I would say.
I would say both sides made mistakes in that one.
Okay, all right. Let's move on to the third one, and that is another striker, Charlie Austin, who scored double-digit goals for relegated QPR, and he was linked to everybody, but no move has happened. Now, you did have the report, I think a week or two ago, that I think it was West Ham said that they decided not to bid on him because of, and this created quite the stir when they said that he's like missing a ligament or has got some ligament damage in his knee, and that's a lot of things that people didn't know, but should another club be coming out with that publicly? Probably not. So I'm thinking that health concerns are why Austin didn't move, is because he's got a bum knee.
But, you know, if you're getting 15 Premier League goals out of a guy with a bum knee, and all you are asking is, you know, £15 million, I think a Newcastle, a Southampton.
Yeah, no, anybody, man. You could have used him.
You know.
Yeah.
I think somebody like that takes a chance on a Charlie Austin because, mm-hmm. you know, I just happen to know a guy who coaches Charlie Austin, and he tells me that nobody works harder than Charlie Austin, day in, day out. The guy is constantly working on his game, and you know, he is your pretty much your typical lunch pail, go to work, you know, leave it all on the pitch kind of player. And you know, for £15 million, I just don't see the logic in not buying Charlie Austin as an insurance policy, because I think you get a minimum 10 goals out of the guy, even as a sub.
Exactly. It made a lot of sense for a lot of clubs. So, but I know injury concerns have scared a lot of players off for a lot of reasons. You know, Demba Ba had a bad knee. He failed some medicals, and that kept him. But
Demba's done great.
Yeah, and exactly. So that's kind of my point, is it kind of slowed him down for a while, but, you know, he went on to Chelsea. I think, is he still over in Turkey?
He is, yeah. Right, no, actually, he moved to China.
Oh, he's in China now. Okay.
Yeah, he just moved, yeah.
Okay. And then I guess another player would be Remy. So these are both guys who played at Chelsea at one point. Remy with that heart situation.
Yeah, Remy's still playing for Chelsea, you know, with a heart condition.
Yeah, and so that scared a lot of clubs off of him.
I mean, so Diego Costa's pumping 50-gallon barrels of horse placenta into his hamstrings, for crying out loud.
Like, hourly.
Yeah.
That's not like daily or weekly. That's hourly.
So, that one I don't get, you know? I just don't get it.
Yeah, I guess clubs are just scared.
I don't think QPR made it difficult either. You know, they said, hey, here's the price. Come and get him.
Yeah, they would have sold him. You think $15 million in this transfer market? That's a freaking deal right there. Yeah. That's like going to the dollar store almost.
Almost. I mean, people are paying insane amounts of money for
Dollar
for
General.
Unproven talent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, $15 million doesn't seem like a risk. It just doesn't.
Exactly. Especially when you consider that, you know, you're only going to pay 40, maybe 50% of that up front. And if you're so worried about it, I'm sure QPR, you put a clause in there saying, hey, if this bad knee goes out, well, then, you know, then we lop off a couple million off that fee. You see that in other sports, to where if a player gets injured, they receive less money. So that had been, maybe you get creative there.
Yeah.
And say,
I don't know. I don't know if that's legal in the EPL.
Yeah, it may not be. But I'm throwing it out there, and if it is, maybe I could go into some kind of like medical law type of thing like that, where I represent players.
It just doesn't make sense to me. I think Charlie Austin is one of those players that maybe that's why I'm not running an EPL club, but I would have taken a chance on a guy like that.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Especially so maybe with the come January, he could be hot property.
Yeah, especially with the dearth of strikers. I mean, Man United is sitting there going, "Well, we need a striker. Wayne Rooney sucks."
Mm-hmm.
Even Man City is not really doesn't have a lot of strikers.
No, there seems to be a striker shortage everywhere because clubs aren't willing to sell their good players.
Yeah.
And when they do, they sell 19-year-old kids who have scored, less than 10 goals in their career for $36 million guaranteed.
Yeah, they're spending on potential, but they're not spending on proven talent for some reason. And Charlie Austin is, he was on the England squad in June.
Yes.
And he, he played every – he wasn't injured last year, I don't think.
No, I don't think he was.
I don't think he missed games last year, so I don't get that one.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on here, and I know this is something you want to talk about, so I'll let you kind of take the floor here, and you could ask me questions.
Sure.
Let's talk about Germany and some of the moves there that you would like to highlight.
Oh, Germany's been great. I mean, a couple things about Germany that I'm excited about. One, I can see the games on TV instead of watching them on the computer. So that's exciting. Two, the UEFA coefficient for Germany is now higher than the English Premier League. So for anyone who wants those Champion League spots, you better be rooting for all of the English Premier League teams in the Champions League this year. But, with Kevin De Bruyne leaving Wolfsburg, I thought they recovered quickly and well by bringing in a few players like Draxler, who I think is just a terrific player, and I think he fits the De Bruyne role really well. I think they're very similar. And Dante from Bayern Munich, who's somebody that Pep Guardiola always talked about as being good, but then kind of left on the bench a lot. So those two pickups in particular, I think Wolfsburg is going to be able to stay close to a Champions League spot and keep a Champions League spot. So that's the biggest, I think, news. And I think, all this noise about Man United getting Thomas Müller, I think, was insanity. I think there's no way that Thomas Müller ever leaves Bayern until he's played out or somebody else takes over that club. So I don't think Thomas Müller ever leaves.
No, I would agree with that. Müller, he'll stay there until he's old enough to get that MLS move.
Yeah, probably. Probably. He's going to break the World Cup scoring record here in the next World Cup. So I think he's just too much into he's woven into the whole Bundesliga so much that, there's no way he's going to leave. And, I think with the move of Bastian Schweinsteiger to Man United, you can see, he's got no legs. He's a 40-minute player for Man United, so you can really see why Bayern was willing to get rid of him. I mean, maybe he's offering something off the pitch that's valuable, but on the pitch, I just don't see it. Mm-hmm. As far as some of the other moves in Germany go, I don't think anything happened at the last minute, did it?
No, I think Dante and Draxler were both deadline Dante days.
Dante and Draxler were the big moves, right? And that's because of the De Bruyne money.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to see status quo probably in the Bundesliga with Bayern, and then followed up by, you know, 20 points behind. Then you'll get Wolfsburg.
Wolfsburg, Leverkusen, Schalke.
Leverkusen, maybe Schalke. I don't know. I mean, they're losing Draxler. That's a big loss. Mönchengladbach is kind of off this year. I don't know, but yeah, it's great football. I love watching it.
It is going to be. It's good to see some games, and it looks like Fox is doing a little better job of putting some games on FS1. That's so people can see, considering that people with terrestrial cable can't watch, don't get FS2 around here. I know you got the satellite dish, so.
Yeah. So I got FS2, so yeah, I'm getting a few more games than you are, but. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm interested in this De Bruyne, because obviously his history is interesting. He kind of got ran off at Chelsea because he didn't fit.
Right.
Goes to Germany, says, even though I don't think he played the full season there, right? Because he came at the end of the window in August. So he misses, you know, a handful of German games, and then goes on to break the German assist record. Or not that he didn't set the record, did he? I think he did, but he led the league in assists.
Yeah, he led the league in assists, yeah.
It might have been a record, too,
13 goals and 24 assists,
yeah, maybe? Something ridiculous. So, and now he's off to a direct rival of Chelsea. Manchester City buys him. So, really, could Chelsea have done a better job to keep this guy in the mix somewhere?
Well, contrary to the rumors, Chelsea did have an add-on clause, so they will be getting money out of the deal.
Okay, I know, but you end up buying Pedro. So wouldn't it have been better just to keep De Bruyne than having to buy Pedro? I don't know. That's just a thought.
No, because, you know, once again, with Kevin De Bruyne, you got a guy who, A, wants to start, mm-hmm. wants to play every game. And B, doesn't track back on defense. So, you know, at Chelsea under Jose Mourinho, you can only have one of those, and that's Eden Hazard.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the problem with Kevin De Bruyne at Chelsea was, you know, he didn't quite fit because, you know, he was frustrated that he wasn't getting enough playing time.
Yeah.
But the guy sitting in front of him is Eden Hazard. So, you know, what do? Well, you sell him. So, he's a great player.
Yeah, but he's capable of playing out left or right as well. But as you said, the defense is a big part of what Mourinho wants, and that's why if you listen to the show last week, folks, Corey and I talked about Pedro, and that's why we thought Pedro was a good fit, because in that Barcelona system, everybody's required to, you know, track back and win the ball back. So we thought that he would adapt. He would adapt well to Mourinho's system.
And that's why I think Pedro will do better in the Mourinho system than De Bruyne did.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because of that fact. And I think Pedro's already, you know, playing well for Chelsea. Not great, but he's starting to play well.
Yes. All right, let's wrap that up there. So that's Germany. So that's exciting. And we may talk more about Germany on this show now that we could watch the games, but we'll see. There's so many games out there now. We're blessed in this country to have the access we do. And I know I complain and I hammer on Fox for how they present things sometimes, but at least, as you said, they're accessible now and you don't have to look for a virus-ridden stream.
Well, one, you know, what you can do is turn the game on and go to the Bundesliga website,
mm-hmm.
and they have audio streams in English.
Oh, yeah.
So.
And those are free.
And those are free.
Well, there we go. I did not know that. I may have to.
That's what I do.
I might have to tune those on to watch or to listen to Cologne from time to time.
Oh, yeah. The fighting Billy Goats. The
Billy Goats, that's right. That is my German side that I follow. So, yeah, the Billy Goats. Up the Billy Goats. All right, Jim, we got some listener questions here as we get close to wrapping up this show. I think we'll just wrap up. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. We got two questions. Are you ready to answer some questions? Yeah? You sound excited or interested.
I am.
Okay. First question from our buddy Myron. He's a Man U guy.
I'm sorry.
Quite a bit. Yeah. Yeah, he's okay. Myron knows that. So, question for Myron. He says, what's the drug that Ed is on? And I do believe...
What's the what?
The drug. What's the drug that Ed is on? And I do believe since he's a Man U guy, he's talking about the... Ed Woodward? Is that the name of the Man U...
That would be him.
Director of football, or I don't know what his real name, what his official role is.
Yeah. So, let's see. What would be a good drug for
what
someone...
What drug is Ed on? Because he's, you know, he's letting LVG run havoc at Old Trafford.
I'm going to guess a very strong... European strain of hashish because you know he's really random, he's he forgets things a lot, doesn't get his paperwork in on time, makes irrational choices.
There we go.
I think
I've got a new movie idea for some people out there.
That would be my guess.
Okay. No, I like that. So how about if this keeps going on and this craziness keeps happening at Old Trafford, how about as a sequel to a long-running American movie series, how about Harold and Kumar Go to Old Trafford?
Oh, yeah.
They've been to White Castle. I think they've been on vacation to Europe. They've already been to Europe. I think that's a movie. They go to Amsterdam. Well, why not take, you know – hop on over to Paris or something, take the Eurostar into London, then take the train up to Manchester United. Harold and Kumar go to Old Trafford to meet with Ed.
They would probably get very high and watch the mouse infestation at Old Trafford.
There we go. I like it. I want to write that down. Harold and Kumar, we're going to send this to some Hollywood people. Yes. All right. So there you go, Myron. I hope that answered your question.
That's just my best guess based on research. Mm-hmm. Research.
Yeah, firsthand research. Anyway, second question, final question. Now, this guy, his handle on Twitter confuses me. There's this guy. Hold on here. Let me get it. There's this guy on Twitter. His handle is at LSU Arsenal Corey. He has a question. I don't know. What is he? Is he LSU? Is he Arsenal? Is he a soccer supporter? Does he support American college football? He's very confused. He needs to pick a sport.
He's not like a pretentious kind of guy who would put like umlauts over the O or anything, is he?
No, he would never do that. No.
Okay.
No. But so this LSU Arsenal Corey guy, he asked the question. He's like, are some transfers in this window – like spending $6 on a dollar menu item?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what Ed does. You know, Ed gets high. He walks into the McDonald's and he orders, you know, the double cheeseburger. And he hands the people across the counter a fiver. And they say, No, sir, this is only a dollar. And he's like, No, keep it. It's okay. I think it's more
like, you know, when you go into the grocery store high and they put all the potato chips like right there at head height, like right when you walk in.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
The potato chips and the chocolate and all that stuff is like right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you just have to get it. You just have to grab. But yes, I think every team but Arsenal is actually, you know, can be accused of doing that this season. But Arsenal, you know, I think all of Arsenal's money is in the bottom of that gigantic coat that Arsene wears, and his arms just weren't long enough this year to reach it all.
Ooh, I like that. And his coat's not a down coat; it's a money coat.
It's a money coat.
Yeah, it's that puffer jacket.
Yeah,
it looks like a caterpillar. The full length one. It's not stuffed with goose down.
It's stuffed with pound notes.
Bills. Yeah, I like that. You know, that's an interesting theory.
Yeah, and so he just couldn't find it, so they didn't buy anybody.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha.
Because Peter Chef basically walked over to, the Emirates and said, "Hey, can I have a job?"
Yeah. He might have sat out there with a sign.
Are you guys hiring?
Yeah.
Do you need any 6'7" skinny guys?
He went to the Arsenal career fair in the summer.
And that was it, right? Yeah. It was funny because I looked, I'm like, Arsenal had to have bought somebody, a third team right back or something.
Well, they
didn't. They bought Peter Cech.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't know why Arsenal fans are upset. I know a lot of people are upset just because he didn't buy. They have a settled squad. They have enough depth. I would say they're okay.
They're okay, but they need a striker.
Well, I mean, they got guys who could play. They got Sanchez. They got Giroud. They have Walcott who could play there too. But I guess Giroud is the only true striker. I would agree.
He's not a finisher.
Well, people bash on him, and I mean, I hate Arsenal too, but he's not nearly as bad as people claim. Does he finish his chances? I mean, he's not world class, but he's very good.
Yeah,
and I guess people are expecting him to be world class, and the problem with world class is there's only maybe two or three world class strikers out there. So, good luck.
Well, get in line. I define world class as being in the top five at your position in the world. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's my definition. You may have a different one, but he's definitely not one of the top five strikers in the world. But but I think Arsenal needed to add some depth to their squad, and they didn't. And because they have injured, they just get injured. Arsenal's injury list is always long.
It is. That is true.
And I don't think that they did anything to improve that.
Maybe they stay healthy this year. I don't know. I mean, they did change training regimens last year. They brought in a new physio. So maybe this is the year they get lucky and everybody stays fit. I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't want to talk about them. I didn't think we would. Usually, we have to because Corey always finds a way to bring up Arsenal into the conversation.
He did find a way tonight.
Well, no. I mean, you didn't have to mention Arsenal. You did. He didn't mention Arsenal. Yeah, see? Thank you, Jim. Jeez.
That's why I'm wearing the clown face on my on my thing there, on my video.
Yeah. Yeah, too bad people can't see that. It's truly terrifying. What is that? What's the Stephen count? Is the Stephen King with the clown it? That's the wrong one.
It looks like that, doesn't it? It does look like that.
Yeah, is that it? Is that the name of that book?
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Okay, yeah. The movie, too.
No, I think you're correct.
Yeah, that's the clown.
I think it was a TV show. I think not
a
movie.
It was something. Okay, yeah.
It was something. It was made into something.
Good job there, Stephen King. Yeah, buy it. Maybe that'd scare the heck out of people. You had that up top as a striker. The defenders and the goalkeeper would run away. You'd score. You bagged tons of goals.
Tim Curry dressed in a clown suit?
Yeah. all right. Well, let's wrap this insanity up. Boys, Jim, thank you for joining us. I guess I'll give you the last minute here to what's going on with Year Zero Soccer. You got anything you would like to promote?
We do, in fact, we do. We're going to be beginning our 4-on-4 soccer tournaments this fall, and that will be coming to a neighborhood near you over the next year. Our first one is going to take place in Charleston, West Virginia, where we've had good success converting tennis courts into futsal courts with our good friend Chris Kessel. And we're making great progress down there, especially in West Virginia right now. But year zero, we're still going. We kind of took August off for the most part because everybody's been taking vacations and stuff. But yeah, we're coming back in a flurry of activity here for the fall with the tournaments and doing some clinics, and all kinds of good stuff will be coming our way this fall.
All right. So, yeah, everybody go to yearzerosoccer.org if you're interested in more. And then they're at yearzerosoccer on Twitter as well, I do believe.
Yep, and Instagram.
And Instagram, yes, pictures. People and are Facebook. Very visual. And Facebook. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we're everywhere, man.
So, yeah, so Year Zero Soccer is coming to a town near you someday.
Someday.
So, all right, Jim. Well, thank you for joining us. And I guess thank you again to Jacob for some lively talk about Man U. That was fun as well. So, yeah, hopefully Corey will stop being, you know, a lazy, degenerate loser, and he'll show up next week.
You know those people in Alaska.
Yeah, I know. They're always, you know, drinking and getting lost in the woods. That's what happens.
Chasing bears and shit.
Yeah. So, all right, Jim. So, for Jim Hart, I'm Chad Smith. Saying be ready for that trailer. Harold and Kumar go to Old Trafford. It's going to be awesome. So, all right, folks. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week. Ta-ta.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at twodaftyanks.com or at @twodaftyanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.